This is The Danglers, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast. One fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
Welcome to episode 22 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulryan. Please remember you can always get involved with the podcast at the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via RSS, via iTunes, via the email to the blog post and episode updates. You can read and then comment on the show notes or the blog posts, and you can also follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side of the website, and you can leave a voicemail message either on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417, or by recording a message straight onto the website using the record a message button on the extreme right-hand side. If you've got a smartphone, you can also download the free Stitcher.com app and listen to the show that way. Once again this week, Paul Tomei recorded another message, and here's what he said.
Kevin, it's Paul. Hey, great show. As always, you nailed it. I can't wait for the new stuff, the new direction, the different things. I believe that there's just so much that can be dissected and, you know, taken apart and brought to the, front. So, love listening to you. Keep up the great work. You are the man when it comes to Yes. Talk to you soon. Bye.
As always, Paul, thanks so much for the kind words. I hope you enjoy the new style of this episode. Also, Scott Bell broke the record this week for the number of comments on the website. Thanks so much for taking the time to do that, Scott. If you're interested in the history of the band, Scott's your man. I'm looking out for an opportunity to have him on the podcast soon. Just before the main topic this week, a quick update on the Yes Music Podcast transcript ebook. Our great friend Paul Wilson is working flat out to make sure we can launch it this month, March 2012. The plan is still to make it a free download, but we'd like to encourage as many people as possible to contribute to a music therapy charity, as well as downloading the ebook. More details will be available on this soon. So this week I'm varying the format of the podcast. Next week I'm intending to go back to doing an album episode, which will probably be Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe. But this time I'm going to choose a Yes Music topic to talk about, which is the frequent changes of personnel in the band, and what effect this has had on the music. And I'll be principally talking about the studio albums, rather than live performances of the band. I'm doing this mainly unscripted, which is an experiment for me. Please let me know what you think of this approach, and whether or not it works for you. So, I've titled this episode Perpetual Change, which is the name of a book by David Watkinson, and surely it's the tagline for the entire history of the band. If you've ever looked at rock family trees, Yes's must be one of the most complicated of the whole lot. Thinking about the continual changes of personnel in the band reminds me of what happens in a string quartet. If you look at something like the Amadeus Quartet, or in fact the quartet which is led by my old violin teacher, which is the Cool Quartet, spelt C-O-U-L-L, there have always been frequent changes. But I think the big difference here is that they don't play their own music. They play pretty much a standard repertoire of string quartets. They might add their own interpretation, but in the end it's the same piece being played by classical musicians. In rock music, the music is much more identified, I think, with the writers and players on the original record. They often have unique styles rather than having learned the traditional or accepted way of playing. Often they're self-taught, rather than in a string quartet where most of the players you'll find have been to music schools and been taught in the same traditional ways as each other. So I think the situation is rather different in rock music. Now, there are some parallels, of course, in the history of many rock bands in terms of changing personnel. Now, I'm not a rock historian, so please don't complain if I get any of these details wrong. I think the most high-profile example of replacing a singer in a band must be Queen. after Freddie Mercury died. Of course, he was one of the most charismatic, recognisable frontmen in history. However, they found when they tried to replace him with Paul Rodgers that it really wasn't very successful. Other bands have been very successful in replacing lead singers. You can think of Genesis when the original prog father Peter Gabriel left and was very successfully replaced by Phil Collins. Of course, Phil was already a member of the band, so it's a bit of a different situation. Others who have replaced lead singers successfully include AC/DC. You'll be able to fill in the gaps on that one. Another prog band who've attempted to replace a lead singer with some success was It Bites. Not only was Francis Dunnery the lead singer, he was also the lead guitarist and the lead writer in the band. Another band who had to cope with the death of one of the personnel was the Rolling Stones, of course. But what about if Mick Jagger had gone? Could they really have replaced him with someone else? And the parallel is obviously John Anderson leaving, yes. Another band who've had a huge number of changes is Deep Purple, and also King Crimson in the prog rock arena. However, King Crimson, of course, have Robert Fripp, who is kind of their constant. He drives the band. And perhaps a parallel with Yes would be someone like Chris Squire, Keeper of the Flame, as you know, who has been there on every single studio album. So is there a difference between replacing instrumentalists in a band like Yes and the singers? On Twitter, I asked, is it more difficult to replace a singer than an instrumentalist? @Lintz1969UK replied, yes, I think so. Voices are unique normally, unless, of course, the musician is brilliantly unique. @ElectricFreedom replied and said he'd say so. He says, look at Yes, several guitarist and keyboard changes and a successful drummer change, but every change of vocalist has resulted in one album before they leave. @ProgGeorge, which is Prog_EORGE if you want to find him, he says, of course, a vocal has its own vocal register, and finding something similar is hard. An instrument just needs to read the parts, which is an interesting point of view. And finally, @AlanJohnKing points out that replacing the vocalist rarely works well. I think one of the problems with trying to replace Anderson in Yes is that he not only has a unique voice and very recognisable voice, but also he's at least part of the soul of Yes. He's one of those musicians in the band who define what it is. I wonder if there's also something about the stature of musicians who replace others in Yes. When Yes replaced Rick Wakeman with Patrick Meraz, he was obviously a very accomplished, a very successful musician in his own right. Replacing Tony Banks with Steve Howe, obviously Steve Howe had an enormous reputation before he filled that spot. Bill Bruford again was replaced with Alan White, a very successful drummer. Steve Howe, how do you replace Steve Howe? Well, when Trevor Rabin came into the band again, he was already very well known. Other examples would be Jeff Downes replacing Rick Wakeman and Trevor Horn replacing John Anderson at that time of the Drama Project, both of those band members in the Buggles and successful in their own right. So compare that with what happened when Igor Khoroshev came into the band, or Oliver Wakeman came in, Benoit David, John Davison more recently. What effect does it have when the musicians are not as well known? Although, of course, Oliver Wakeman has a famous father. When Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe recorded their album, they replaced Squire with the brilliant Tony Levin. But, of course, he was never made a member of the band. It seems bizarre now, really, to think of Tony Levin as a session player, but he certainly was on ABWH. So maybe the stature of the musicians makes a big difference. One of the problems I think Benoit David always had was that he had the stigma of being a tribute band singer. Now, of course, this did work in bands like Judas Priest, who I think engaged a tribute band player very successfully. But Benoit David has always, I think, been very unfairly treated, simply because he came from a band in which his role was to sound as much as possible like John Anderson. And even John Davison has had his moments of paying tribute to Yes in a cover band. Although more recently, of course, with Glass Hammer, he has done something rather different. I think the changes in Yes personnel over the years have really fallen into two camps. One was an evolutionary change, and the other was a revolutionary change. Some of those earliest changes, Steve Howe arriving, for example, Rick Wakeman arriving repeatedly, Alan White arriving to replace the original band members, were evolutionary changes. people who were already established artists in their own right, coming into the band and moving the band onwards. This is particularly clear, I think, when Steve Howe arrived, and the first record that they made after that was, of course, the Yes album, which took the band in a completely different direction. Later on in their career, Igor Khoroshev arriving had his own style, had his own way of playing, but fitted in quite well to the rest of the band and what they were already doing. After settling in with Open Your Eyes, when The Ladder came along, yes, there were some differences in the keyboard playing, but generally they were trying to replicate the mood and feeling of 1970s albums, which Igor seemed to do really rather well. He fitted in. It was an evolutionary change, not a revolutionary change. I think the same was true with Billy Sherwood arriving, for example, and it was an evolutionary change when, for example, the old band members came back for Keys to Ascension. It was trying to look back again to the 1970s, to the classic period of Yes, and recreate that rather than trying to do something different with the band. So examples of revolution rather than evolution would be those times when members of the band have arrived, for example, with songs under their arm. They could be seen as resurrecting the band from a period where it wasn't really working. Obvious examples would be when Trevor Horn and Jeff Downes from the Buggles arrived and the revolution led to drama. Trevor Rabin coming with his songs and resurrecting the band in 90125. After that, he became obviously much more established with another two albums, and there was an evolutionary change between 90125, Big Generator, and then on to Talk. But certainly he changed the band quite significantly when he came in and brought his material with him. I think Union is a special case, really, because that was two bands working completely separately and then coming together to produce that album, so that doesn't really fit in with this analysis. However, most recently on Fly From Here, we have Trevor Horn on production duties and Jeff Downes back on the keyboards. Again, they brought tracks which had been worked on and developed with other band members, Howe and Squire, in the drama period, but the writing owes a lot to Horn and Downes. And again, they've done a lot to resurrect the band in terms of its studio output, along with Benoit David. Benoit David, of course, was already in situ in the band, in that slightly strange role that he had of just being a live singer, and just being chosen, perhaps, arguably, because he sounded very much like John Anderson. So there was an evolutionary change there, with Benoit filling in for John, as it were, but a revolution when Trevor and Jeff came with that material, which they dredged up from the drama period, and worked on as a band to produce Fly From Here. So I suppose it brings us on to the natural question of what happens next in Yes. What will John Davison's impact be? He does write music, unlike Benoit David, although, as we said last week, Benoit David does actually have writing credits on one track on Fly From Here. But John Davison is a writer. Is he only going to be like Oliver Wakeman, a live contributor, or will he get to record with the band? Is it going to be a revolution with John's own distinctive style being added to the mix? An evolution, or will we see John Anderson back at some point? It's going to be fascinating to watch and see what happens. So that's about it for this week. Next week I'll be back to looking at an album, as I say, probably Anderson, Bruford, Wakeman, Howe. Please let me know what you thought of this week's experiment on the site at yesmusicpodcast.com, on Twitter at yesmusicpodcast, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading a file or recording a voice message via the site, or by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.